Hi, this is Keith Overholt, President and CEO of the Downtown Rescue Mission, coming to you with another Stories of Hope podcast. Today I have my friend Aaron, who has been, well, I won't tell about who he is, I'll let him tell, but he's been here at the mission for a little while, and talk about how you came about coming to the mission.
Yeah, so I've worked here for a little bit over a year now. I moved to Huntsville about 3 years ago, and I used to work in ministry similar to this for Teen Challenge for about 6 years. I actually went through Teen Challenge, so I came from a background of addiction and stuff and found Christ. And anyways, I moved here, and I just wanted to get back into ministry again. Yeah. And so I was going to this church, and the pastor was kind of talking about wanting to start some sort of a recovery program or something, and it seemed kind of interesting to me. And then he brought up the Downtown Rescue Mission. He's like, have you ever seen the Downtown Rescue Mission? I'm like, no, I've never been there. And so I reached out to Corey and Adam Casey and Justin, and they set up a meeting with me, and we went out to lunch. And they're like, would you like to come take a tour sometime? I'm like, yeah, we could do it right now if you guys want. So I came down here and took a tour. And I just remember when I came on campus, I just loved what I seen, you know. I felt the presence of God here, and just seeing people's lives being changed, and just seeing that you guys are doing something very similar to where I came from, and I just wanted to be a part of it. So I didn't really think a lot of it. I remember when I was here, I felt like God was telling me that eventually I'm going to be involved here in some way.
Yeah.
And then a few months went by, and I saw that they were hiring a part-time chaplain, and I was like, hey, that might be my foot in the door. So I came and did the part-time thing for a while, and, you know, just fell in love with the place, and God opened a door for me to get on full-time here. So
yeah. So being a chaplain, but there's a whole lot of story behind that before you became a chaplain, right? So
yeah.
Talk a little bit about, usually I ask people where they were born and that kind of thing, and where were you raised? And so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've lived all over the place. I was born in Arlington, Texas. My dad was an Air Force guy, so we lived in England for a while, South Carolina.
Yeah, you have that English accent.
Yeah, you think
no,
so?
No, no.
Lived in South Carolina for a while, yeah. And Oregon. And anyways, but I grew up in Boise, Idaho, which is where I kind of say that I'm from, because that's where I went to high school and everything. My parents got divorced when I was pretty young, and then my mom remarried a guy that wasn't a very great guy, and I just kind of had like a little bit of a rough childhood. It wasn't that bad. Like, my mom's an awesome lady, and I still had a decent relationship with my dad, but I was kind of a troubled kid, and I didn't go to church or anything when I was younger. My family wasn't really big on church and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I got into, like, playing guitar and drums and, like, hanging out with those kind of that crowd, like, wanting to be a rock star and stuff. And so I started experimenting with drugs when I was really young, like about 14, 15, you know, smoking marijuana and drinking. And then I'm like a product of the opioid epidemic that became a big thing when I was in high school. And so we were, you know, drinking and doing marijuana, and then got introduced to like OxyContin and Norco and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we didn't even realize what we were messing with. And I bet you like half my high school was on it. And it messed me up pretty bad. When I was about 16 is when I started doing the OxyContin and everything in my life. And then I realized what addiction was, because I was like, you know, physically addicted to it. And then I just couldn't get sober. And when I was about 18, I decided I would just join the Army. And that's how I would get sober. So I did. I joined the Army, shipped off to basic training, quit doing pills and everything. But then I just started drinking and partying in the military. The same kind of deal, you know. Was in the military for about 4 years. I got stationed in Alaska for a lot of the time. And really, I was pretty miserable, because it wasn't just the drugs and the alcohol. It was like the void or something. Like, something was missing in my life, basically, you know, and didn't have a relationship with Christ. Ended up getting out of the military and going back home, where I'm from, in Boise.
How long did you serve for?
4 years.
Okay.
Yep. Served 4 years. I did, like, logistics and supply and stuff for a combat engineer battalion. And then when I got home back to Boise, I had a bunch of money in the bank because of my time in the military. And then just ran into some old friends and kind of got back into doing drugs again. And then, you know, it got really bad that time, to the point where, like, my family didn't want me around anymore. Like, basically blew through all my savings and was just rock bottom. And then, like I said, my parents split up. So my dad was living in California at the time. And the crazy thing is he actually got saved, and God, like, totally changed his life around, because he was struggling with alcohol. And like I said, he didn't really go to church or anything like that before. Wow. And so during this time, when I was a mess, he had found Christ and really, like, was serious about his walk with the Lord. So I reached out to him, and I'm like, you know, Dad, I'm a mess. I'm, you know, doing heroin now. It's gotten that bad at this point. And I was like, I need some help. And he's like, I'm going to come pick you up. And he drove 12 hours, like, right away. Wow. Went the phone, drove 12 hours, picked me up, and drove all the way to California. And then he just told me, he's like, you can't stay at my house because you need to get help. And he's like, you're going to go into Teen Challenge. And I'd never heard of Teen Challenge or anything like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was very similar to what you guys do here, basically. You know, yeah. You come in and you're just in the Bible all the time and teaching and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, basically I met the Lord there. Like, I had an encounter with Christ. And we had some really good teachers similar to this place. And then after that, it was just like, I just wanted to serve him. I'm one of those rare cases where the Lord delivered me from drug addiction.
Yeah.
Like, I just never had a desire again after I got saved, you know.
So how long was the Teen Challenge program that you went through?
It's a year, and then there was like an internship, and then they had a Bible school in L.A. that you go to for another year.
Yeah.
So it was like 2.5 years, basically, of program.
So what did it feel like when your dad came, picked you up for 12 hours, and then he's like, hey, we got here, but you're not staying in my house?
I mean, I was kind of nervous about it, but like, I'd just gotten out of the military, so I'm like, you know, whatever it is, I can probably handle it. You know what I mean? It'll be better than what I'm doing now. So I was pretty ready to get some help, you know?
So what was it like going into that program? I mean, was it like here where we have an emergency shelter, or did they just take you right into the program?
So it's different in the sense that you just go right into the program. I think I had to wait a few weeks at my dad's house before they had like an open bed.
Yeah.
But then, you're just in the program, and it's really strict, and I'd say it's even stricter than here. It's just it's like you're just in the Bible all the time. Like you're not allowed to have cigarettes or nicotine or nothing like that. It's really strict there.
Yeah. And I think it's called Teen Adult Challenge now, right? Isn't it?
Didn't there's no teenagers there. Yeah. So I think they did do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really a program based on people with addictions, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you were going through it, did you have any friendships during that time or anybody that influenced you during that time?
Oh, yeah. Lots of people. People I still talk to today that are doing ministry. In fact, there's at least three guys that I went through the program with that are pastoring churches now in like California and stuff.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing what God can do when he takes a life and changes it, right?
It's amazing, yeah.
So talk a little bit about their program. What do they do with their program? Is it set up like ours? Or
I mean, it is really similar. Some of the differences is like they don't have thrift stores.
Uh-huh.
They do a lot of fundraising.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm talking door-to-door fundraising. I did that a lot.
Uh-huh.
Like we'd go in a van. They'd drop us off with a binder, and they'd say, go talk about Jesus and try to raise money. And so I did that, like, quite a bit for, like, 2 years.
And where was the place that you were at?
Okay, so the first phase of the program was in Bakersfield, California.
Okay.
And then that's, like, the entry phase. It's, like, 3 months. And then when you finish that, they send you to Riverside, California for the rest of the time. It's, like, 8 months or something. And then after that, the Bible school is in Los Angeles. So
Southern California area.
Mm-hmm, Southern California, yep.
So tell us after the program and, you know, you want to get out and serve the Lord after that, but, you know, what was the process and where did you go from there?
Yeah, so after the Bible school, in L.A., what they would do is you would have class, and then there'd be teachers teaching and stuff, and then you would work at a church in Los Angeles. Like, you would, whatever you had to do, like, I led worship and helped with children's ministry, and then we would fundraise on the weekends and stuff. And then when you graduate, like, you're sending out resumes to places trying to get into ministry, which is what I wanted to do. And so I ended up getting a job at the entry place in Bakersfield, working with the guys as, like, a teacher advisor. I did that for a while. Then I helped in development for a few years. And while I was in Bible school, the one-year school, I met my wife. So when I was in Bible school, I wanted to meet a lady. Like, I wanted to get married and stuff. And I remember I was just praying that God would bring a lady to my life that never did drugs or nothing.
Yeah.
Like, because I know that's what I needed. I needed someone that, like, had a really strong foundation in Christ to kind of keep me out of trouble. And I met my wife. She was on a missions trip from her college down there in LA. And then she ended up working at one of the churches that I was working at. And then we met and we fell in love, got married, and then moved to Bakersfield together. And I started working there at Teen Challenge.
Where was your wife from?
She's from Minnesota.
Okay. So she was, what college was she at that they went to?
Northwestern.
Oh, okay. So, So they were doing a mission trip down in California area. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was like a 3-month mission trip. I didn't meet her on that, though. When she was on the missions trip, she was part of this church that I was at.
Yeah.
And then she got offered a job there when she graduated. She was running the children's ministry there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
how interesting how God works, right? That you're from Idaho, really, and she's from, you know, not anywhere close to there, right? And
yeah.
You guys meet in Southern California, right? Yep. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you guys, how long did you date and stuff? And because it didn't happen like overnight, right?
No, yeah, we dated for about a year, I'd say. Well, a little bit less than a year.
Yeah.
And then, well, then she moved up to Bakersfield before we got married, and Teen Challenge actually, like, let her live in one of the reentry apartments, so we weren't living together, obviously, yet.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we got married, and then they gave us a house on campus to live in for a while, just two of us as we were newly married and doing that. And then we wanted to kind of start a family. We didn't really, we were living on like a ranch, like at a men's ranch out in the middle of nowhere, kind of in outside of Bakersfield.
With program guys,
with
right?
program guys, yeah. like and everything, yeah. you know yeah. what I mean? So we wanted to do something different. So yeah.
tough to raise kids there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we moved back to Idaho, and then I got my real estate license and started selling real estate, and, still served at my church, but I wasn't really working in ministry anymore for a while there.
So does our development staff here know that you've been raising all this money for, you know, Teen Challenge all these years? I mean,
no, I haven't mentioned it really.
I mean, now we need to get you on the development staff too.
Yeah. I'd love to help.
It's probably nice that you don't have to raise your own money now, right? I mean, you're able to just administer, right?
Actually, it humbled me a lot doing that. I learned a lot from having to ask people for donations.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. So you're back in Idaho, you're not really going to church? You said, or
no? I was going to church. I was serving in a church, but I wasn't like on staff or anything.
Yeah,
I was just strictly just got a job in real estate and went and did that for a while. And then we lived in Idaho for, gosh, like 6 years or something like that. And what happened in Idaho during COVID is the real estate market kind of exploded. And my wife and I had bought like a pretty small house there, and we just had a second daughter, and. So, yeah, my first daughter was born, like, shortly after we moved to Idaho. And she's now 5, and she's about to be 6. And then my other daughter's 3, and she was born in Idaho right before we left. Anyway, so we wanted to upgrade to a bigger home, and houses were selling for twice what they were before. So we sold our small home and made a pretty good amount of money off of it and realized that we couldn't afford something nicer in Idaho.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why we came to Huntsville, because we were just, like, we'll move anywhere. Like, why not? I mean, her and I have bounced all over the country anyway. So we started praying about it, and we were looking at the real estate markets in different areas, and Huntsville was like this up-and-coming place.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why we landed on it. It was between here and, like, Fayetteville and a couple other markets that we were looking at. And this is where the Lord ended up leading us. We ended up buying a house here before we even moved here, and then just came down here and kind of started over.
Wow.
Yeah.
So really a prayerful thing that you
Very
just felt
prayerful.
Like that God was leading you to the South, and, you know, you're going to come to Huntsville, Alabama from Idaho.
Yeah.
Right? And what was that like? I know you've lived all over the country, but it's kind of like almost like an Abrahamic journey, right? I mean, you're God tells you to move, and you're moving, and don't really know what's going on there, right? I mean, you can tell Huntsville's a up and coming city, but did you come here without a job? And
well, my wife actually had a remote job,
okay,
so she had that going for her, and then I felt like I could do real estate pretty much anywhere. I had to make new connections and everything, but.
Sure.
But yeah, it was an adventure, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, we prayed a lot about it, and we considered a lot of different places, and it's just, you can see God doing things where you just know that's what he wants you to do.
Yeah.
You know, you just see him opening doors, and how everything just kind of worked out perfectly. And so, I had a lot of peace about it.
Yeah.
And I love it here in Huntsville.
Putting down roots though, where you have nobody though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody here.
Yep.
So what was that like when you first moved here? I mean, was it getting involved in a church early, or how'd you do that?
We bounced around to a few different churches.
Yeah.
Before we found the one we're going to now. We've been going to Mount Zion Baptist now. That's where we've been going.
Yeah.
But yeah, just we bounced around different churches trying to find the right spot and everything. It was kind of a culture shock as far as the heat here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not really used to it.
A little humid.
Yeah, we came in August.
Yeah.
So it was brutal, man. It was really hot. And then there's a lot of snakes here, too, which is pretty crazy. I mean, I saw a snake, like, in my backyard within a week of being here. So.
Yeah.
That was pretty intense, but
well, I'm from Buffalo, New York originally, so it was a little different temperatures here than it was where I was born.
Yeah,
excuse me. So you get on your path down here, and you feel God's leading you here. What's the next couple of years like? What are you doing? And were you working right away, or how was that going?
Yeah, so I was selling real estate, and then I was working for Terminix doing sales for them too. Mm-hmm. So I got on with them doing, I loved that job. It was awesome. They gave me my own car and a gas card and just like kind of let me do my thing. And so I did that, and I'd make a lot of real estate connections while doing that too. So it was going great, but I really wanted to get back into ministry because I just felt so much more fulfilled when I was seeing God working in people's lives. And churches are great, you know, but I wanted to get into like recovery ministry, homeless ministry, something where I could really see God working, you know.
So ministry is almost like the Godfather, right? I mean, it's like being in the mob. Once you get in, you almost can't get out because you're being pulled back in.
Absolutely.
All the time, right? How long before you finally heard about the mission?
It was like probably about a year and a few months ago.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you came, took the tours, mm-hmm. and you were hired on for the part-time job. Did you know any of the, you mentioned some of the names of our staff. It was Adam and some of the guys. Did you know any of them before you came?
Nope.
No.
Nope. I think that the pastor of the church I was going to, which for some reason I can't remember the name of the church. It's like right by my house. Not Pine View. Not that pastor, though. It's the church right next to it. It used to be a strip club, actually, and then they bought it and turned it into a church.
The Refuge.
Pastor Jason, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Refuge, yeah.
Yeah, he used to be on the board, I think, or something.
Yeah, he was. And that's right.
So he's the one that kind of got me in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then when I worked part-time here, it was just, I just thought this place was great. You know, the staff here, it's honestly incredible, because like I said, I've worked in ministry, been around a lot of churches, but everybody here is just dialed in, and they just really love what they do. And so I just really liked it here right away.
So you work here part-time for a couple months, and then something happens. You hear at the work. What happened?
So my whole life, you know, military, I played sports, never broken a bone before.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, when I moved to Huntsville, I was actually pretty overweight. I was like about 80 pounds heavier than I am now.
Wow.
And so I got in like good shape, got back to working out every day. So, and then we have a basketball tournament here, right? And I'm in, like, the best shape of my life at this time. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I can play some basketball.
Yeah, the basketball tournament is for the guys in the program and some of the staff.
Yeah, so every graduation we have a basketball tournament
here.
And the guys love it, and it's competitive and fun, you know. And they asked me to play, and I was like, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, like, kind of cocky because I'm in good shape, and I'm like, oh, I can play with these guys. And within about 5 minutes of the basketball tournament, I end up breaking two bones in my leg.
Yeah, and you stepped wrong or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing. Like,
yeah,
it didn't even look like anything even happened. Like, I went up for a rebound and came down and just snapped my leg. I don't know.
We have this guy who is part time for us, and we love what he's doing. And how long had you worked here before you did that?
Oh man, like maybe 3 months.
Yeah, so 3 months in, and he breaks his leg, and I wasn't even sure you wanted to come back to work for us, because, you know, tell a little bit about, you went through some issues with that.
Oh, it was really bad.
Yeah.
Like, it was no joke. I was in the hospital a bunch of times. I ended up getting blood clots in my leg, and my leg swelled up and turned purple, and it was a really bad injury.
You almost thought you were going to lose your leg, right?
No, I didn't get that bad.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, it was pretty scary. I was on all these blood
Adam nerves. Thought you were going to lose your leg. That's what he told me. So.
Yeah. He puts drama on it. Yeah. But, no, it was rough for sure. It was a really hard time. And you know what? That made me like this place even more, because everybody was so supportive and calling me and checking in on me and everything. Yeah. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So then after a little bit, we had a full-time position come up, and you took on that. Talk about your full-time work here.
Yeah, I love my full-time job. It's awesome. So it's the same thing I was doing, except for now I'm like full-time chaplain now. I usually work days, and Adam works the evening shifts, which is awesome. He prefers that. I'd rather work during the day. So basically, my job is just meeting with guys when they come in, finding out their story, like, how can we help them? What are they trying to do with their life? Are they trying to get some help for their addiction?
Yeah.
And if they do want help, then I tell them about the program, give them a tour, kind of be like the first face they see, pray with them, stuff like that.
Yeah. And how many men do we usually have in our overnight area?
Probably like between 170 and 200, I think I'm about.
So we have few chaplains, but you guys have to manage all those folks and meet with them. So when you're meeting with them, you know, what's one of the hardest things you have to do in your role when you're doing the chaplaincy? What is that?
One of the hardest things. I would say just like the hardest thing for me is when I see guys that have a lot of potential and they're just messed up. And you can see that, like, you know, they can do better with themselves, but they don't want it. You know what I mean? They don't want the help. And that's hard. You know, sometimes I want it more than they do for them.
Yeah.
And that can be really challenging.
Yeah. And our overnight area for the emergency shelter is, for men and women, is free. And so people can come and go as they please. And that makes it tough for chaplains, too, because you guys are really trying to push them into the program.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when it's free and they get to stay back there as long as they want. And in fact, we're talking about maybe redoing some of that in the future. But, you know, because our real goal here is getting people in the program where they can truly change their lives. Now, not that they can't change their lives there. They're going to hear the gospel at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But it really does change when they get in the program. Talk a little bit about the program here and what impact it has on people's lives.
Oh, it's amazing. What's really amazing about my job is I see these guys at the very beginning when they first get here. You know, they have no clue about anything. They're just a mess. Their life's completely, they've hit rock bottom, basically. And then they want to get in the program. Usually their program's always full.
Yeah.
So they have to stay in men's overnight, and they have to show us that they're serious. So that means they have to check in with us and be proactive about getting in the program. So it takes work on their part to get in the program.
Yeah.
Because we have a great program here, and people come from all over the place to be in it.
Yeah.
And so once they do that and a spot opens up and they get in, then they're in the program for a whole year, you know, just learning about Christ. I always tell these guys in my foundations class, like, you're going to have more knowledge of the Bible than most people do.
Yeah.
You know, so God's going to use you, and he has a plan for your life. That's why you're here. You know?
I always tell people, our program is really almost like an intensive 1 year Bible school.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's a lot of times that the guys are going through that they're probably studying more than some of my staff, because they're in the Word every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a couple classes that they're taking every semester. So,
yep.
As you've been here a year, is there any particular story that touched your heart of somebody that has come through their program or that you've met in overnight? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the first person I really met that had an impact on me was Chase, and he actually was on our security staff for a long time. When I first started working, he was on security. Anyways, he told me his testimony, and it was just super powerful. I mean, he said he was homeless on the streets for like 6 years, doing fentanyl, just a mess. And this guy, you would not even know that. I mean, Jesus has completely changed his life. Like, he's on our security, went through K-Tech. Now he's making like $30-something an hour or something, and he's doing about to get his own place.
That's awesome.
Off campus. So that was awesome. And then Tyler, you did an interview with him in here, Tyler Mitchell. I really like that guy a lot, and I really want him to do well.
Yeah,
you know, and he's doing really well right now. So,
and when you're thinking about the guys getting the program, I mean, that's really the emphasis that you're trying to do, is get people in the program. You want to witness to the folks when they're in overnight in the emergency shelter, but you really want them getting in there. And then we want them to graduate, and, you know, we want them to love the mission, but we've taken care of them for a couple of years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And we want them to be successful on their own. And really talk about that. What does success look like from a chaplain's perspective of when people leave our program?
I think the most successful thing would be them knowing Jesus, and like really knowing Jesus.
Yeah.
And not just that, but knowing how to have a relationship with the Lord when they leave. That means like getting up, reading your Bible every day, spending time in prayer, continuing to memorize scripture, you know, being around other people that love God.
Yeah.
Like, if they can do those things, then they're going to be all right. Even if they make mistakes, and even if they fall for a little bit or whatever, they need to learn to get back up and get back to reading their Word. If they can just take the tools that we give them here, then they can be really successful.
Yeah. We change their dependency from a substance to really on God.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a big difference there because there's a, when they're on a substance, it's always going to have a hole in their heart, right? And that's what Jesus fills, is that hole in our heart that, you know, we have somebody relying. Even if we're all by ourselves, there's somebody else that we can rely on. And boy, that takes a lot of pressure off of us, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, I've seen so many guys come in, and you mentioned how much different the one guy looks than, you know, probably than when he came in.
Yeah.
I've had a bunch of stories throughout the years that I've been here, but, you know, there's been some times I've been in a restaurant, a guy will come, "Hey, Mr. Keith, how you doing?" And I'm kind of taken back because I'm like, I don't remember this guy. Well, it's because he looks completely different than when he came to the mission at first. And now he's got a wife and kids and he's got a house and then, you know, awesome. He's great in church. And I'm like, this is not the guy I remember. You know, I remember the skinny guy that came in here and now he's, you know, looks completely different. Not only does the difference from when we have Christ in our life change our heart, it changes our outward appearance too. Yeah, so many times 100%. It just completely changes what the person looks like.
Yeah.
So as you're doing what you do, how much longer do you want to do mission work or work at a place like Downtown Rescue Mission?
I mean, as long as the Lord tells me to stay here. I mean, yeah. I'd like to be here for a long time.
Is it that rewarding?
Oh, I love my job. Yeah, absolutely.
And if somebody was out there and thinking about going into something like this, what would you tell them?
I'd tell them to do it. You know, go get involved and... I mean, the fruit of the gospel is changed lives. And that's what Colossians 1:6 tells us, is that changed lives is the fruit of the gospel. That's what it's all about, being a new creation in Christ.
Yeah.
And you get to see that, like, firsthand here. You know, you get to see miracles that God is doing. So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever have temptations of being, hey, I could make more money going doing real estate again, or I, you know, own my own business, or?
Well, I still do sell real estate, still. Yeah. And,
but I mean, full time, I mean, instead of just being
Well,
here.
I mean, I was making pretty good money before I came here. And to me, that wasn't fulfilling at all. Yeah. Like, I'm fine. God takes care of all my, when you're in ministry, like a lot of people don't realize this, but when you're in ministry, like God takes care of those things.
Yeah.
Always. Like, you don't have to worry about it.
My Baptist minister dad used to say to me, if you're serving the Lord, there's things that he does for you that you don't even know. He said, maybe your car lasts longer, your tires last longer, mm-hmm. or that starter that was going to go in your car, you know, maybe the Lord continues to keep it going, right? And he said, you never know. It seems like when you're in ministry that some of those things work out for you because you don't need that as much as you do when you're not.
So
So you came up through addiction, mm-hmm. you know, after through high school and then after your military career. If you were to look out at somebody in the crowd listening today, what would you say to them if they were dealing with something like you were going through back then?
Well, if they're struggling with addiction, I'm convinced that only Christ can really help you get over that.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there's a void and you're trying to fill it. You probably have issues within yourself that you don't even know about that God needs to heal. So I would tell them to find a program, find a pastor, find somebody that you can talk to that can try to get you some help, because you can't do it on your own. You just can't.
Yeah. And the folks that you were involved with in California mm-hmm. with Teen Challenge, what do you think they're thinking about you now? When they first saw you come in, you're a different guy than you were then, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm sure that they're, you know, thankful and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's part of the reward that we get, though. We get to see this happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, we see miracles happen every day.
And really do.
When people's lives are changed, and, you know, I think about that for all the folks that work here, the chaplains and all our program, you know, pastors and everybody. And just, you know, the reason why, you know, we try to pay as much as we can, but, you know, the reason why people are so excited about what they do is because they see an outcome.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you're working in you know, just a regular day job, there's not that outcome where you're seeing a life changed. And when you see somebody come in, an alcoholic or a drug addict, and they come out a new person, a new creation in Christ, it's amazing to see.
Yeah, it really is. So rewarding. I'm thinking of this guy recently. He would show up in men's overnight just drunk all the time. And me and Chaplain Adam gave him an ultimatum and said, look, man, you either need to join the program or you can't stay here anymore, because he would just get belligerent. And he's been in the program for like a month, and like God's really working in his life and he's doing awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that only God could do something like that, you know?
One of the things when I've had staff here for long, you've been here for a year, but for long periods of time that I concerns me is becoming callous, right? I mean, there's so many folks that come through here and there's so many hard issues that they're dealing with. That after a while you don't want to have where you've heard every story and you've been, sometimes you get manipulated, right? And some of those things happen, that you watch out for being callous, where you be like, you know, I want folks that are working here that still want to hug on a guy, you know, because at the end of the day, boy, showing Christ's love is going to be an important part of that.
Yeah.
But not becoming callous where you're like, man, I've heard that story before, brother. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. I mean, especially if it maybe a guy's been here a few times and hasn't done well, and then he's back again and he's broken, and it's like, well, we've already heard all this, you know? Well, it's like, you don't know when that time's going to be when he actually gets it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but there is a fine line too, because, you know, they have guys that have been here longer than me, have a lot more wisdom than me, and they've heard things that, you know, I don't understand. So there's kind of a fine line there, but yeah, I think giving people the benefit of the doubt and trusting that, you know, God has a purpose for them being here and staying, like you said, like staying, having a humble heart about it, a soft heart about it.
When I worked at the rescue mission up in Buffalo, New York, I became really good friends with Mo. He was a black gentleman, and he and I was in college, and he and I just hit it off. We played basketball together and stuff. And Mo at the time, when I knew him, was just finishing up the program. And then he actually went on to be in a head of security at our mission up there and really did great. You know, he changed his life completely. But I knew Mo even before that, and Mo had been through our program not once, not twice, not three times, but five times. And I actually asked him, I said, Mo, one time we were finishing up playing basketball, I said, Mo, what was it about that fifth time? And he said, you know what? The other times I was kind of faking it. He said, I was going through, and it was a better bed and a better meal, and, you know, I didn't have to sleep in the emergency shelter. And he said, but I had not really gotten to the point where I was going to take it serious. And he said, that fifth time I took it serious, because when I came in, he said, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And he said, you know, I knew that if I was going to continue on the path I was going, I was going to die.
Yeah.
And so I think of that when I think about Mo and our program here, is that sometimes it's not the first time they go through the program, and maybe not the second time or the third time. It may be the fourth or fifth time. And we've had guys do that where they go through the program. And a lot of times those guys will drop out after the first step or the second step or, you know, and if finally that third or fourth time, they're like, you know what, this is something I've got to do, because otherwise I may end up dead.
Yeah, I mean, I can think of people that are on staff here that have been through the program a few times before they got it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, God's using them in a big way. So you never know when it's going to click. And it's not like all the other times were wasted either. I'm sure they got some good information and learned something along the way, and then they finally get it, right?
It's that fine line, though, you talk about when we work with other Christian organizations that sometimes we'll recommend for a guy to go to their program because they've been through ours a few times and they already know all our courses and, you know, and so there is a fine line. But again, there's many times guys will go through a few times before they get it. But there's a lot of guys that go through that first time. It's like, holy cow, this is what I needed.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely. That's kind of how I was, I think. Yeah. Like, I just, you know, thank God I kind of just got it right away. And I think it's probably because I didn't have Jesus in my life at all.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's a disadvantage to guys that grew up in church and they've heard all this before, you know. And for me, it was like all exciting and new. And I was just like, this is amazing. You know, God is real and stuff.
That's true. We have some guys that come through here that they know as many verses as some of our chaplains, right?
Yeah,
and you know, they can speak the speak, right? You know, they know all the Christian talk. But a lot of times those are the guys that need to be more in depth because they have just been speaking it and not really taking it into their heart.
Yep.
So if you were to look out into the audience today and there was a 15, 16-year-old guy that was kind of like Aaron back in the day, what would you say? And I know your path took you to where you are today, and that's a good path. But what would you say to somebody that was starting down that path of addiction?
I mean, I don't know if my 16-year-old self would have listened to anybody, but I'd probably just pray for them and let God work in their heart, you know. I mean, he's the only one that can really change us and save us. But try to encourage them, try to tell them my experience maybe, and just share with them the gospel. And
Yeah,
that's probably what I would do.
There's hope, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they may be at that 16, 17-year-old or whatever age they are, but if they're in that grips of addiction, there is hope out there. They don't have to stay in that lifestyle.
Yeah, there's a God that loves you, you know, and Jesus paid the price for you, and he wants a relationship with you. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you see yourself in 5-10 years, what are you doing?
I mean, I think I'll probably be working here still, serving the Lord, doing something.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd be awesome. And what would you have for any recommendations out there if anybody is thinking about getting into this kind of work? What would be like three things you would say, hey, if you're getting into this kind of work, what would you do?
You got to be really patient. You got to have a real loving heart. You got to seriously care about people getting this kind of work, because you're going to see some messy stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is some of the things when you're doing your counseling, there's some rough things that these people have been through that I mean, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and there's stories that I hear that still shock me today. And it just, it's like, how can somebody go through that? You know, and sometimes you don't want to make it an excuse, but sometimes you're like, well, I can't understand why you went down the line of addiction.
Of course.
You know?
Yep. That's so true. And then mental illness is a big thing too.
Yeah.
That we deal with a lot, which, you know, obviously.
Yeah. How many mentally ill, what percentage do you think that we have in our overnight men's area?
I mean, 60% maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's severe mental illness, some of them.
Schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And the hard thing is, like, getting them to continue to take their meds. You would think, like, that someone would just take meds if they were, like, hearing stuff. But
yeah.
Sometimes they think they're the ones in reality, and we're not in reality.
Yeah.
And how do you convince somebody otherwise, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that's the tough thing, is that the mental illness is really driven to the point. I mean, in the 80s, we had some mental facilities that people could go to, and they're not around as much anymore because they kind of shut those down. The government wasn't funding them anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a proponent to get some of those back up and going, because I think that there is some help for people to keep them off the streets, especially because what happened in the 80s and when they started shutting those down, it ended up being rescue missions had to take care of mentally ill people.
Yeah.
And so, and you, I know you know firsthand, mm-hmm. but you know, back then we weren't equipped. I mean, we didn't know all the, you know, lingo about, you know, schizophrenia and that back in the day.
Yeah.
So now when we have guys who are coming up as chaplains, they know that a big part of what they're going to have to deal with is mental illness. And it's tough because some of those folks, like you said, it's, they can't almost help what they're going through. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know,
if they get on the right meds, then they'd be fine.
Yeah.
I know we connected with some Christian therapists and stuff that are going to stop by here and see people. And so maybe they can try to help, because it'd be easier if we could help them here instead of having to try to get them somewhere.
Yeah.
Because then they have to go somewhere and they're not going to do that.
And we do have partnerships with Wellstone and some of those that are our mental facilities here.
Wellstone's a great resource. Yeah. Yeah. We use them a lot.
But a lot of people don't understand when they see homeless folks out in the street, it's not that they've chosen, not everybody has chosen that lifestyle. Some of it's that their mental illness is where they're down that path. You know, one of the things I talk about with folks too is, and I'm a real proponent, I just did a sit on the bench for 24 hours a few weeks back and really have a conversation about what homelessness is in our area and then nationwide. And one of the things that it really bothers me a lot is I hear a lot of people talk about homeless and they talk about them, you know. And I've even had, you know, officials tell me, well, you know, you guys feed people and house people. It's like, you know, housing dogs, because, you know, people come in and they're, if you feed them, of course, they're going to come in. On my Christian side, I'm saying, yeah, I'm going to feed them because I want them to come in my door. I don't want them dying on the street, you know. And plus, I want to share Jesus with them, right? But, you know, have you run into that at all where people look down on the homeless? And talk about that a little.
100%. Well, I also think there's a lot of people that come up with ideas on how to help the homeless people, but they've never even talked to a homeless person or even been around homeless people at all. I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if you want to really know what people are going through, like come volunteer, come help out, come talk to some of these guys, and you'll see there's a wide range of different reasons why people are in the situations they're in.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of people come here and that are here for like a week or so. They just need a place. They have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And they're so thankful that the mission's here, like so grateful. Like that happens a lot, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and what I mean by it too is, you know, we have men, women, and children that come through our doors every day. And that's a dad or a son or a grandson. Mm-hmm. They're human beings that God created. They are God's creation.
Yeah,
and whenever anybody looks down their nose at somebody, it really bugs me a lot, because it's like you don't know where they've been. You don't know the circumstances they've been. You don't know what their mental state is. And you're saying, well, you know, you're treating them like dogs. They're coming in. You know, no, these are human beings that God created, you know, and it bothers me a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the Bible says that God chooses the foolish things of the world to shame the wise.
Hmm.
And you and I, you know, we see the finished product as these people's lives being changed by the Lord. So you never know what God's going to do in someone's life.
Yeah.
You know,
over 30 years in rescue work, some of my best friends were homeless, you know, and if I had looked down on them, boy, the life potential that was there, because again, it's God's creation. And that's why, even if the mental illness, right, I always look at somebody and say, boy, there's a potential that they can have a better life through Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, brother, I appreciate you coming and talking with me this last hour, and love what you do here at the Mission in your heart. And of course, your story of how you got here. And I love that now you feel like you're giving back because God saved your life. And now you're trying to share what God can do in other people's lives.
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me be a part of the team.
Yeah. Well, this has been another Stories of Hope podcast. And we're so thankful for you listening today. And if you have any questions or comments, you can always put that in the comment section. And we'll try to answer those when we can. Again, this has been Aaron, and this is Stories of Hope.